Welcome to the Planning Board meeting, March 4th, 2026. The time is 6:30 PM.
Funny how you think differently than you did when you were 20.
A lot, yeah. So I would like to call the March 4th meeting of the Candia Planning Board to order. Please rise, face the flag, and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right.
March 4th is the only date that makes sense as an English word.
Okay,
March 4th. That's March 4th.
Like, yes, yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's true. All right, so we're going to, Judy, you're always first, so I'm going to start first with you. Judy.
Here.
Kevin.
Here.
Linda is absent. She probably will arrive a little late. Dave.
Here.
Brian.
Yeah.
Tim, here. Mark.
Here.
All right. So first up is GIS Mapping Services. So, Judith, you may want to pull your chair up here if you want, because he's going to project up on that wall.
Okay.
Tim Fountain is the VP and one of the owners of CAI Technologies, a New Hampshire-based GIS mapping company. Megan and I saw Tim spin his wonderful tale of magic and were wowed. So we have decided to have him come in and present to all of us. And if we get a consensus, we will find the money. With that,
thank you. And thank you all for the opportunity to meet you. Again, my name is Tim Fountain with CAI Technologies. And before I get into, if I could sit down, with before I get into demonstrating the AXIS GIS platform, I'd just like to introduce myself a little bit further and my company. With complete transparency, I usually try to arrive about a half hour late to get everything set up, and usually connecting to the internet is the most challenging part of these meetings, okay? I haven't had good luck so far, but I'm going to do my best to wing it as I go, okay? So, as Tim said, I'm one of three of the owners of CAI. Cartographic Associates Incorporated, that's what CAI stands for, that's our legal name. But just for a little bit of background, we've been around since 1985. Started as a parcel mapping company where we just focused, I wasn't working with the company at the time, but we just focused on tax mapping, updating, reading deeds, updating and maintaining tax maps.
Which is one of the things they still do, they do for the town of Candia.
And you are a client of ours, appreciate your business. So the one service that we currently provide, as Tim just said, is each year through, primarily through the assessor's office, property line changes are sent to us through a recording at the registry, subdivisions, boundary line adjustments, mergers. That data sent to us, we update your map data, which is maintained in AutoCAD, and then we deliver updated maps and the updated data to you. So CAI grew up as a parcel mapping company, and we still do that, but as technology evolved and GIS became more and more used by local and regional governments, so we serve towns, cities, and counties, we started getting kind of pigeonholed into, oh, those are the tax map guys, but we do so much more with GIS. So that's why we kind of rebranded and do business as CAI Technologies. Our main office is located in Littleton, New Hampshire. Not many people at all work out of there anymore, to be honest with you. Some of our admin staff and some of our staff that's been with us for a long, long time. They primarily do all the remapping from scratch, you know, reading deeds and building the maps from scratch.
Wow, hard.
Yeah, it's mind-numbing work. I did that for a long time. And believe it or not, there's still some towns in Vermont and really rural New England that don't have tax maps. So, but then there are a lot of towns, like Sandwich, New Hampshire, we just remapped. They want to use their parcel data and their maps for more of a municipal GIS foundation, so they know they had to improve them. Anyway, we employ around 30 full-time staff spread all around, primarily the East Coast, but all around the United States, serve about 750 cities, towns, and counties, primarily in New England and the Northeast, but we do have clients peppered around Mississippi, Georgia, Colorado, Alaska, believe it or not. Those are through acquisitions that we made, where we buy a competitor who, I'll mention this name, Don Dollard. Does anyone recognize that?
I recognize that name.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, so that's how we became the opportunity to work with you. We acquired Don Dollard's company. So it's a little bit of a background, but we primarily focus in parcel mapping and maintenance, GIS services. That's what we're here to talk about today. We do have a division of our company that maps and serves specific water, sewer, and drainage customers. So we don't get into electric or gas or power, but water, sewer, and drain, we also focus in that. We'll go out and map those systems or help our customers map and maintain them. So with that said, the Access GIS platform is known as software as a service. And I have, I think, 4 slides. I'm not a big slide guy. I like to do things interactively and move around the map. But I do have 4 slides that I'm going to show you that kind of help ground me about introduction to the platform. But just by way of introducing it to you, it is a subscription. You sign up. It renews annually each year. It's kind of like your cell phone bill. As long as you pay the bill, the power stays, or the phone stays on. and there's no software, no licensing, no software that needs to be installed here or anything. It's a URL or a web address that's going to be placed somewhere on your website, hopefully, where it can drive traffic to the site. All the pricing for this platform is strictly based on population. So regardless of how many data layers you have for us to host, it's all population-based. Our lowest tier of population price in the pricing is 20,000 or under, which I know you are.
We won't have to worry about tier 2 for a while.
That prompts me to look at my notes. I have some notes that I want to refer to when I was getting ready for this. This is usually the point of the meeting where my projector bulb blows up.
can you not plug that into the TV by HDMI?
I can. I just don't have a stretcher.
HDMI long enough?
Yeah, I got 6 foot maybe, or 3 foot. Yeah. If you have a cable, I'm more than happy to.
I'm surprised that you can't reach. If it's on the desk there, you could be sitting over there and plug right into the TV.
You need a USB or whatever. She needs to be controlled like that. She's connected to the monitor.
Oh, yeah. That's
he would have to have his computer connected to the monitor.
Right.
I was under the impression you want me to take this and just plug it in the back of that TV.
I believe you can. But if you want to project, then that's what we'll do.
I usually just like staying away from, and thank you for that. I like to use my own laptop, and it's not because I'm a germaphobe or anything. It's just I can't remember any of my passwords. They're all stored in my browser. So usually people say, hey, jump to Cambridge or jump to here or go there. Or I want to see what they're doing on their staff site. And I would be all thumbs trying to figure that out over there. So, okay. So, yeah, see these things are spinning. That didn't load right. But I'm just making sure I'm on the internet here. But back to the introduction. So let me just get to start this here. Okay. You can see that. Yeah, okay. So the name of the product is Access GIS, but let me stop for a minute. Before I go any further, anyone have any questions? I want to respect your time. You have a full meeting ahead of you. I want to get in and get out as fast as you want me to, but be as informative as I can. Before I get into the product any deeper, any questions about who I am, who the company is? You may have seen a lot of our sites all around. We serve hundreds and hundreds. Are we good enough?
Good enough
for a basic introduction? Okay. So Access GIS, the whole idea was that you're spinning on an axis. That's what it is. Every time people hear me say that, they usually think Access. There's no component of Microsoft Access that's required for this, okay? So these slides just help me stay grounded. So This is probably the most important slide, and this is really a snapshot into what we're trying to accomplish with this platform. So you can see the center, the cloud, ArcGIS. So it does run in the Amazon Web Services cloud. Okay, so that's who we pay to keep all this infrastructure up and running. And the GIS content, the layers, the parcel data, all that are stored up in the Amazon cloud. But typically, where we start an engagement, which would, in best of my ability, what I'm thinking is it'll start in the assessor's office, because you have the parcel data, the property line data, and what you're going to hear me call the CAMA data, the computer-aided mass appraisal, the land records database. Maybe it's Avatar. Is that what who yeah. you guys use? Okay. So once you have that information linked to a property, now you can query it. You can find out where Tim lives or where Mark lives. You can find out how far I am from a flood zone or what's the aerial imagery look like behind me. So you guys have a general sense. That's what we're trying to accomplish here for both the taxpayer, the board member, the town staff, the appraiser, the realtor, get information from the map, okay? So this slide is intended to illustrate, I'm going to introduce this concept called data processor. It's a piece of technology that sits between the Avatar land records database in the assessor's office and the map. This data processor's function is to keep the ownership and the information up to date. So when Tim sells to Mary, there's a workflow that they get the deed from the registry, they update the ownership, update the book and page, save that, the data processor runs and updates it, okay? So if you take that same concept and rinse and repeat it across all the different systems you have in Candia, you can now push data into the map, say a permitting system, say an asset management system, or all these other systems, calls for service, for police, all that. And that's what we're trying to accomplish, is when the timing is right, and I'm not saying it is at all for Candia, don't misunderstand me, but when the timing is right, this system can grow with the needs of the community. And if it just stays in the assessor's office, that's great too. But usually, in a municipal GIS, it starts with the assessing data and the parcel data, and then layers continue to build on top of that. Okay? And we put technology in place to keep that up to date. ArcGIS is a platform, like I said, that is intended to grow. And in the upper, make sure I'm looking at this right, the upper left there, system for public engagement, that's really what we're talking about right now, talking about today, or the your upper right there as you're looking at that. So this is similar to, I think, what you have on your website now, where you have a map and you have information and you have a bunch of layers, but this system is responsive. There's no separate app to download. It'll work on any browser, your tablet, your mobile device. Okay? Just a URL. Okay?
Can I ask a question?
Sure. Yeah.
So when you talk about layers,
yep.
Like we have land maps that say, oh, here's a map of Candia with the water table partially of poorly drained soils and that kind of stuff. Is that a layer that yeah. you could incorporate?
Soils would be a layer.
Okay, yeah. So, because one of the things that we've been seeing is the possibility of adding intelligence into planning that we do. So areas that have poorly drained soil and no water available, it would be good to know that when somebody comes before us and says, we want to do a development here.
Exactly, right? Exactly. That would be a perfect example of the use of the GIS, okay. of what you would do. And then if we just take that one step further, you may have someone come to you that says, I want to do this with a particular property. And then ArcGIS is intended to give you a place to find out information about that property. Is it cut or is it wooded? Is it swampy? Is it, what do the contour lines look like on it? How far is it from a flood zone? How far is it from conservation land? Measuring tools, all these different tools for you to answer questions. Yeah.
That's what we're looking for.
And there's a lot of free data out there that's all the stuff from UNH or Granite, like some of the soil data, the contour data I reference, FEMA will provide the flood mapping. Those data layers are all available out there, and it's our job to bring them in and bake this cake.
Right. So you mentioned the fee for population less than 20 is infinite layers?
Yeah, pretty much infinite. Yeah. Okay. I haven't found anybody yet that's made me
maxed
pump
yet.
The brakes.
Okay.
But now, here's what we do. We are consuming those layers from their authoritative source. So I don't have FEMA's layers on my server.
Right.
I'm fetching them, pretty technically, from FEMA.
There's a pointer. So there's pointers.
Exactly. What I do have on my server that is something that I'm, was the load, would be your parcel data, would be your, if you had, sewer infrastructure, water infrastructure, your zoning map, your data that is specific to the town of Candia. Okay. So this slide, I don't want to talk about it too much. Again, this is more of just a way to help me introduce to you that this platform can start really small and stay small. And it's not my job to decide when and how it grows, but I want to make sure you know that this is a product that can grow with it. Okay? I was talking earlier to Megan. The smallest customer I believe we serve in New Hampshire is Hart's Location. I think they have a population of about 30. Okay? They use this product. They pay $3,000 a year. That's what you would pay. I'll go over all the pricing. And then a large customer, and not necessarily New Hampshire, but I like to spotlight it because they're very mature, which is Cambridge, Massachusetts. So they use the same exact product. They use it for the same things we were talking about. Cambridge much more. Hart's Location to manage all their conservation land. Okay, last thing, bottom two spokes you'll see, locks, lock and key, padlocks. ACCESS-GIS has a piece of the platform that is intended to be able to secure data for internal purposes only. We do a lot with response time mapping, calls for service for fire, certain layers about walking routes for school, gun permit owners, dog licenses, anything you can think of that has a geographic component. Some of those data layers aren't appropriate to serve out to the general public. They're appropriate for internal use.
We're not going to track guns on this.
No. Some do. Again, I'm not here to say what Candy is going to do. I'm just here to say
that. You don't think you're on some federal list.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure I am.
So that's what those bottom spike, those bottom.
I know that I am.
All right. So here's where we're going to pray to the internet gods. So... So now we're going to get in and do a demo if the internet cooperates.
I see a lot of spinning wheels up there.
That's not good. No,
I couldn't even sign on my phone.
I know the Wi-Fi in this building is, for some reason, right now, deciding not to.
So I have a couple options. Right now, I'm on Megan's phone because that seemed to load. So some of this stuff is just cached.
Do you have 5G, Meg? On your phone
now? No, I only have one bar right now.
I'm going to disconnect this and, with any luck, go back to your...
I got two bars of 5G if you want to try my phone.
Should I try the public?
I
just tried the public.
You did. All right, so Tim...
Be our guest?
Let me turn the Wi-Fi on.
Yeah.
You know
who
you are? It depends where you're staying.
I would work.
I have more coverage back here than I do over there.
Yeah, I don't understand that. But this is a great time for me to bring up. If you don't have internet, you can't use it. So you need a browser or device. You need power or battery. And you need internet.
Candy has spotty service.
Excuse me?
Candy has spotty service.
You can see the
there. Okay, so let me just see if I can see it. So let me see Megan's phone.
Well, I've got T-Mobile, so it's got, and they're strong places.
Right service.
That's
yeah.
A great
so
ad.
I see some new devices. I see iPhone and iPhone 6.
That's me, 6.
All right. And Tim, are you called iPhone or are you called Tim's phone?
It should be Tim's phone.
The Chicken Ranch. Chicken
That's
Ranch,
not me.
Yes. Yep. All right. So let me just turn this on off and turn it on again to see what I get.
My hotspot's off. Although I do have three bars of. No, actually, you got...
Or Chewy. 2E2D, that's you, right? Two?
Yeah, that's my hotspot out there.
All right, we can try that. So what is it, what are you? You're six?
You're yeah. Chewy.
No, he said he's iPhone 6.
Okay.
When I went to T-Mobile, they said, you know, try our Wi-Fi. And I said, I live in a hole. And I showed them where we were in town. I said, you are on the edge of the map. So it's like $30 a month for so like good service or volume service.
Okay, so that may be good because get it. Megan and I are both
I bet
Verizon.
Town Hall would get it. You got a device this big that sits in a window. And you got 5G for $30 a month.
They give it to first responders.
I am, you know, I've got a work phone that's Verizon, so when I retire, I'm going to buy like a cheap system that's not AT&T because I find Verizon works some places, T-Mobile works some places. And I don't want to be dependent on one.
I get sold a bill of goods on AT&T when I retired.
It worked, right?
After you retire, you just take the hammer to your phone.
Hopefully,
you
can get a call.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, I'm not getting it back. All right. I'm not going to take a hammer.
I send my phone.
There you go.
This will be good. If Target. If it can get me through this, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Mark was kind enough to share his hotspot. So I am on, and I could get bounced at any second. So this would be, the reason why I chose Auburn, by the way, and I just want to verify some facts. I have your population around 4,300.
Yeah, close enough.
Yep. Your CAMA's avatar, about 2,000 parcels, I know that. Well, tell me if my information's outdated. Does that sound right? 2,000 property parcels? Okay. The reason why I went to Auburn, and I can go to any town. You see this application and our web services are in, 560 communities of the 700 we serve. The reason why I chose this is they're nearby. We do the maintenance as well for the parcels, and they also use Avatar. So I thought it would be a good...
Similar size, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it would be good. But I can go anywhere. I can go to any of the sites we have.
Oh, that's similar. That's close.
All right. So I'm just going to point out some of the functionality and then do a quick demo. So over here, these are the layers that we were talking about, Kevin. This is what is in the town's sort of service, okay? So I was saying like the zoning map, so that's on my Amazon infrastructure, okay? These are just like light switches, okay? The plus signs, you click on a plus sign, you open it up, and you hit a circle and check it, just turn it on, turn it off, okay? There are the legend for the different colors and what they mean. Okay? So the data, we were also talking about data earlier from other authoritative resources. All these layers here, we mentioned a few, contours, flood zones. I'm just going to turn a few on and off. You can see those are coming from different sources, but they're baked into this map here, you know, baked in. So we can see now... We can analyze the property information and how close or how steep or how, you know, and then we can throw on, here's another layer underneath all this. This is the imagery. This is the color imagery. So now I can zoom in and I can see the contour data, the flood zone data, the imagery.
Amazing, isn't it?
And if I want to measure how far something is, feet, I click and say, okay, that building is roughly 290 feet from that flood zone. So that was a quick 30 second. How steep is it? Is it in flood zone? How far is the building? Okay. So I just wanted to put some context to what we were talking about before. So I'm just going to turn these guys off. And everywhere you see a plus sign, I know I'm repeating myself, but you can drill in and you can get to those legends. And fold everything up and go back to my default basement.
And they can put the conservation on, say somebody wants to see what properties are within a conservation commission's authority.
Yeah. So I have, so the data is the most important, the most expensive part. Okay, well, probably the most important too, but most expensive. So if it's a data layer that I can consume, sure, I'll put it in here. Like we said, it's infinite. It's based on population. But if we don't have that data in GIS format, then there would be the conversation of who's going to create it, who's going to maintain it, how much is it going to cost. Okay, but I do have conservation lands, cell phones, here's National Wetland Inventory, watershed. Conservation lands are freely and publicly, here it is right here. So here are the conservation lands for Auburn.
Is topography freely available?
The contour line? That's freely available.
Yeah.
So this is all read-only data, right?
Yeah, great point. So no one can edit this data. The worst thing that can happen is they shut their browser and restart it.
Now, is there authentication to, like, log in? Like, who gets permission to use this? Is this everyone in town can log in to the town website?
Yeah, we just put the web, like we would do now, we put the web portal there and people get in.
Okay, so if we wanted to make templates, so say we're interested in boundaries, soil composition, water table, that kind of stuff. She's interested in conservation land and wetlands and things like that. Can we have a different template set up that will have certain layers in them or not?
Yeah, the answer is yes, and I'm going to demonstrate that.
Well, right, it's probably because you can turn them on and off whenever you want them. So you can bring it in just plain. We're going to stick in this.
But instead of having to go in there and click all those toggle switches every time, if you said conservation committee's view, this is what we are interested in, right?
Tell me if this is what you're going. So we have these themes, they call them, that are set up, and we could set these up for you. They would basically be accessed through the individual department pages on your website. That, let's say I'm a public works user and I want to get to the public works theme. Well, you see this little query that's running here. Right now it's gathering all those layers, turning them on, and baking a map that we think public works users want to see. So now when I zoom in here, all the public works data is automatically on for me.
So streetlights, sewers,
you have to have the data,
right?
But sure.
Yeah.
So if there was a theme here called conservation, or let's just do land use, that theme can be saved. It can be saved as a URL, and then anyone on the town website that's in the conservation area, you can see how that loaded.
Yeah.
All those layers are already baked on, turned on and ready to go. You bring up a good point. There's another way to accomplish that. It could be through themes, like I said. But let's just say, I'm making this up, tonight we have a meeting on this property right here.
Yep.
Okay? And I feel that the contour data is important and all these other layers are important. Just bear with me. And the imagery underneath is important. So what I can do is I can include in my email or my minutes, I can include this share URL. See this little arrow here? So I just copied a URL to my clipboard, my virtual clipboard. I'm going to email that to Megan and say, can you please have share this with all the members. This is the property we're looking at tonight. Access is going to open. It's going to turn on those layers. It's going to zoom right to that property.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So, do we have enough money?
I didn't even get into a search. Let me just do one search and then I'll leave.
Let's pick up a property too.
Yeah.
We'll do the avatar card and like that too, because I think that's really kind of important.
Yeah.
I told you you guys would be. This is a.
Well, it's everything we've talked about that we wanted.
I know, for years, right?
Yeah. We wasted a lot of time and money on the last system.
They've been listening to all our conversations for the last years and years, and they put it all together.
All right, so I'm looking for Wilson. I don't know if you guys know any Wilson here, but I know there are Wilsons in town. That's why I pick them.
You can pick my property.
So if I...
We're not
if I
in Auburn.
The reason why I just wanted to pick Wilson... We'll go to your property, though, in a second.
It's in Candy.
Is because...
It wouldn't be on your...
Oh.
Yeah, we're only in Auburn.
No, you lived in Auburn. So in all I did was type Wilson in the top. So it's looking through the fields in the avatar data, and it's looking at owner name, street address, and parcel ID. So you see how I'm getting matches for Wilson's Corner Road?
Mm-hmm.
But if I sort this list, I can also look for last name Wilson. Any of this yellow text matches whatever I'm typing in. So now there's Ralph Wilson. Boom. I can mm-hmm. zoom right to him. I can get...
And look at that. It has acreage and frontage on the map.
Right.
It has the information linked from the avatar database. Here's the avatar property record card. I believe you guys use this service as well. There's a CAI property record card. It's just a printable summary card of the use, the assessed value, the building details, the whatever. Just a quick building value. So any documents that are linked here are here. The data is here. And a lot of times people want to run a Butters queries. Mm-hmm. Show me everyone within a certain. So I just hit that little tool there. It remembered the last buffer I run. That's boring. Let's go 100 feet. So now you can see this red line is 100 feet. Okay. I can fine tune my results. And let's say I want to add this property.
Let me ask you this
too. Yeah.
Just because of doing the mapping for when they do applications, we could do a 200 foot of that property radius, right? Done. And then could we put underneath that the satellite imagery so that we can see the houses and buildings that would be within
the 200 feet?
Come on. Yeah, sure enough.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that is an issue.
Yeah.
I got a list of everyone. I got mailing labels.
Wow.
In seconds.
So, my property, I live in Candia. We have a tax map. We can go to Google, and it shows property lines, but the property lines are not accurate to my property. So, GIS could be a little more accurate, I'm assuming.
This is going to take the tax map.
Yeah. Whatever property data you have today on your...
Well, GIS, I don't know what we have currently right now, but what it doesn't match my physical property.
Right. We have a lot of those issues.
Yeah.
Yes.
What happened was mine was a large property. They divided it by five or whatever and then went from there.
Yeah, so
I'm assuming the GIS is basically going to update that.
It's not going to update that. It's not going to change that one bit. What you have today, you're going to have tomorrow with this product.
Yeah.
You're just going to have some tools that are going to make it really quick and easy to use.
Not necessarily from Google Maps, from the town mapping.
I was looking at the town map as well.
Yeah.
The town map is the one that's the issue.
So the other thing I would say is, again, I work in an architecture firm. This is civil information that we work with all the time. And I'm just wondering what the benefit, again, this is probably a little more better information to the town, but what is the benefits to the town? As for you people, what are you going to use this for?
We use this all the time.
Megan, how much time would this system save compared to what we got?
It would be great. If the resident comes and asks about the property, I can print out the card of all the information they need. And compared to the GIS that we have now, it's leaps and bounds.
They're an expert, I
suppose. GIS is how much time on everything that we have right now.
Well, we do have GIS.
But with the subscription.
But how much time out of your day would this save compared to what we have?
To put a number on it, at least 2 hours on average.
Well, it's not to mention the time that this board and the zoning board spend trying to figure this out, right? With our current GIS system, we can do none of this.
Right.
And this also will help an applicant when they file, too.
Exactly.
So if she can save 2 hours a day, and say you get 300 hours out of the year, right? That's 600 hours.
Yeah, that's 2 hours
mm-hmm.
a day times 5 days in a week.
Which
that's
frees
10
her
hours.
Up to do other duties.
We could make her part-time.
If you use it enough, you can also get rid of her.
Boy.
Hey, Tim, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So you suck all our data in, right?
Yeah.
And we have old maps. So since those maps were printed and established, we've done lot line adjustments on a bunch of them. How do we correlate that data after you've, like...
That's when the tax maps get upgraded. That's why every time we have an application and it gets finalized, the tax maps do clean up a little bit, but when? There's so much out there.
Right, but all this, all the legacy stuff, how do we make it current? Is that a fee that we would have your people run a check against records?
No, when you say legacy stuff, can you define that for me?
So every year we hear a dozen or more lot line adjustment requests, okay. and we make them, but that's based on the existing map, and they say, okay, we're going to move this boundary and move it over here.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you on that. And you send that plan to me,
so do
and
we,
I update the map.
Do we send that to anybody now?
No. It should go to the assessor's office, right?
Yeah.
It does.
And the assessor sends it to you.
Exactly. Correct.
But that's going in the future.
That happens today.
No, no.
So
today.
We had our plot line adjusted 5 years ago.
Yep.
We first moved in. It still does not show my plot line adjustment.
Okay.
On GIS.
That's the legacy stuff I'm talking about.
So that's right. Is that going to be corrected?
Yeah. Let's go.
Well, that's because we're on the old GIS.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I remember all the tax map lines were
really bad.
And there was an engineering firm that was supposed to update a bunch of stuff and didn't really do their job, but they got paid for it anyways.
But they
fired us, so we're good.
But just to also to set the stage here, when he's mentioning $3,000, now I haven't heard if there's any other budget money out there that other departments are paying, but this board is paying $1,700 a year to StanTech, or was paying $1,700 a year. So this additional functionality is $1,300 a year.
Well, cemeteries are paying StanTech too for
additional to what we've already budgeted.
Okay, right. So I don't know anything about your budget. Right. So I want to go back to your question. Is it Linda?
Linda Carroll.
So I've been working for the town of Candia doing the annual maintenance.
Oh, so it's you.
Since 2011.
Wow.
All right. When was that boundary line adjustment recorded? Before 2011.
Oh, no. It was after.
I mean, after.
It was
way after.
It was probably.
So that's my responsibility.
Oh.
Why don't I get that plan? Why doesn't somebody send it to me?
I don't know. The board approved it. We came.
Yeah. Did it get recorded?
I don't know. Who was supposed to do it?
Well, the owner records it at the registry.
Well, yeah, we got a deed.
Okay.
We got a deed. All the lawyer did all their stuff. We got the plans from the engineer, who's Jim Franklin.
So the short answer is those changes that come through annually, there should be a process in place that they make their way from the planning board to the assessor's office up to CAI, update the map and come back, and then you see that.
So that process hasn't been done because we have a backlog of lot line adjustments. So for some reason, there's a glitch in the process.
Yeah, there's a glitch in the process, but if to answer your question, Kevin, if there's a backlog since 2011, since I've been working for you, I'll do those. I'm not going to charge you anything extra. Nobody sent us the plan.
Right.
But you paid us to do it.
Okay, so there's a disconnect somewhere.
Yes.
In the approval to the
map update.
The final.
The map update.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that was taken care of, but that work was probably never picked up.
The stuff before we've made changes to the process, because Megan and I have also gotten more proactive about this since we found out that we had a lot of bad data out there, but we're not looking back in history. We're just trying to mop up the recent stuff.
Yeah, so if I could just make one more comment, please. The updating responsibility is on me, but it's the town's responsibility
to
send me
the
changes. Exactly. That's a good idea. Yeah, yeah. But now keep in mind, when you say this change is missing, is it missing off the paper tax maps or off the online GIS that you have today?
I haven't looked at the paper ones.
Well,
I've
that's
only
me.
At online. Okay.
That's me. So there's been an unknown workflow in my mind of when we do all the changes for the paper tax maps, which are printed from the AutoCAD data, I don't know what StanTech does to update their GIS.
Okay, there we go.
We figured it out.
Yeah, we did.
So people that come in with site plans, they're not taking it from the paper, they're taking it from
the
GIS.
From the online GIS, exactly.
That's where that glitch is.
And we say paper maps, I just want everyone to know, those paper maps are maintained, are produced from the data I maintain.
Right.
So I'm going to, if I were a gambler, I'd roll the dice and say that change is on the maps I maintain, as long as someone sent it to me. And
Sherlock Holmes got nothing on us.
Yeah, we figured it out.
Megan and I could not, we didn't do the deep dive to figure out exactly where the problem was, but we know there's a communications problem between assessing and StanTech. We personally know where we think the problem was, which is why
and we've rectified
Tim is
here.
Okay.
And now, if I'm fortunate enough to provide this service to you, there's only one person, that's me, that makes the changes and hosts the data. You see, you're taking that you're taking that middleman out.
Yes, yes. Awesome.
Yeah, the invisible.
Perfect.
So then if it's still a problem, Linda, we can go to the assessor's office.
Being on the cemetery trustees board.
Well, I'll keep you updated.
Okay.
For GIS, for people that are in our cemeteries.
Okay.
Is that something you would do also?
Yeah, I need that data, though. I don't have anything to do with the cemeteries, but please give me that data, and we can put, as long as it lines up on, it's GIS data, it lines up on the earth, and if you have information about who's in each plot or who's in whatever, that data
we just
will
know
come
who's
over.
In the cemetery.
Yeah.
I don't know if they drilled it down.
Yeah. Well, however far it's drilled down now, that data can be in here.
So, okay.
So the cemetery can pay for part of it?
Well, we do for the old one because it's on, we have it online.
Okay.
Right? So people who are interested in the genealogy, they drill down to it.
Oh.
Yep. And then it saves a lot.
Is that right on our town website?
Yeah.
No
kidding. I went into that one.
I mean, you can't drill down to the plot where it is, but you can see who's in that cemetery.
Okay.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the updating workflow, and I think we've identified a key piece. But really what we didn't get into is the spatial alignment of the data, which I believe is what you brought up, with how well the property lines overlay or line up with what's on the earth. Whatever you have now on your GIS data, that's how accurate it's going to line up. Remember, I was in my introduction, I was talking about we have a mapping department that reads deeds and recompiles. That's a whole nother service that has a completely different service than this. Yeah.
Have to survey that to get the updates.
Well, all I do is use the surveyor's information.
Yeah.
So we don't survey. Here's a great example. So that
my
house,
property is like, it's a property off.
Yeah. Well, it's still going to be a property off.
Until
it's recompiled.
Updated. Correct, yes.
Yeah. But let's say we get a survey in for next year's update for your property.
Right.
We're gonna plot that property right because we got a survey. Everything else around it's going to sound and blend in, if you know what I'm saying. Okay. Well, I think I've overstayed my...
The house looks like it's not inside of the property line.
Yeah, so that's an example of spatial alignment.
Yeah.
I forget where I was there.
And it's doing
right
the frontage.
Right. Oh, yeah,
the
one that's
keep going north.
Go up.
Yeah, the north.
Right, we'll stop
there. Right there, yeah.
That
right
one.
There, yeah. Yeah, so this right-of-way may be actually out here. Who
okay.
knows? I don't know. You know?
It looks like a really wide right-of-way.
It is.
Yeah.
It does. But I did. I'm just going to use my back arrow here because I'm lazy. I wanted to go back to Ralph Wilson's property in a second because I had an abutters query up there. Just go back this way. You got to go here. I just wanted to show this one last thing. There's so much more I can talk about here. But we usually abutters is a very common, this is the 200-foot buffer. I just want to say usually planning board people like this works with negative buffers too. So negative numbers. So if I throw a minus 25 in there, I can see what's within that setback.
Nice.
The results are only going to be as good as the property line data. But
tell me this doesn't help us.
There's a lot of functionality.
Yeah, pull it right up that night.
And usually what I, in Hampton, New Hampshire, that's what they do with the planning board meetings. They do this.
Yeah.
So if, I just want to be real respectful for your time. If you are fortunate enough to add this service, I'm more than happy to, once it's built, do a full-blown demonstration, every tool, every button, to whoever you guys would like before it's released to the public, or right, so that way you know all the capabilities and all the tools.
Kind
and
of a training print, session.
Yeah, training workshop, and just have to run a fiber line. From or we just Any other questions?
We'll wrap some tinfoil on the internet router, you know, some tinfoil and put a coat hanger in.
But I'm just going through, just printing a quick map. 8.5 by 11, 11 by 17 is what the public prints. This is just a setback map here. But whatever layers I have turned on, that's what you're going to see in my print.
I see.
And there's a legend that tells you what layers are there?
Yeah, I didn't turn on the legend, but there's a little checkbox there.
Yep.
Just takes up, it takes up space on the page, which this this yellow box's intent is supposedly. So I can set my scale here, 1 inch equals 100 feet. See, you guys see that box there? That, yeah, so that's going to be the extent of my map print. Tim, it's late.
Well, that'll clear up a lot of questions when an applicant comes in there. We're discussing stuff.
Yeah.
Just look at
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Look at
yeah, yeah, yeah. And that, that share URL, you use that quickly too, because just like I was, the other north, you can say here, just put this in your browser.
Well, you know? Megan, I mean, I hate to say it, but you can probably be, you know, creating views like that and sending it out to all of us before, you know, when we get our meeting packets and stuff, right? So that. Yeah. And I mean, how many times, Kevin, have I seen you sitting there pulling up
with
the GIS on your phone, and you can't get any information because none of that information was even there?
Right.
So you're saying in the email she sends us, it could be right in that.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Right.
Isn't the applicant supposed to provide that information to you guys?
Trust but verify.
But?
Trust but verify.
Okay.
And sometimes we have informational meetings too, where the so we can haven't gone through the whole.
But this one, you this
the application
expedite,
before the
else.
Application.
Yeah, exactly.
The pre-application.
And it looks really intuitive.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So my business partner, his name is Franco. We call it Franco Intuitive. Then we can sell it. Yeah. 3 clicks or less. That's it. That's it. There's the USGS quad. These are just all different base maps that you have. Here's the friendly Google map.
USGS topos.
Yeah. Resolution isn't great on them, but, you know, for quadrangle sheets, it's pretty darn good, you know. And the value is overlaying the property line data on it, you know. These are all the different years from Granite. So if you want to look at an intersection or a property and say, what did that look like in 15? What did it look like in 18?
Wow.
Here's what it looked like in 21.
Oh, wow.
Here's what it looked like in 22, you know.
Cool.
Now, does it delineate, like, the wetlands,
Yeah, as long as the data is available.
Aquifers, yeah.
Yeah, so here's a quick snapshot here, too, of all the data that we're fetching in. So bedrock geology, cell towers, conservation, contours, land cover, public DOT roads. Here's the national wetlands, which I didn't get into it, but at the workshop, hopefully, if you invite me for one, I can show you. This also works on the buffer feature, also works on all the other layers.
So
I showed a buffer on a parcel because that's what everyone wants. But let's say you want to buffer everyone within 500 feet of a wetland and get a list and send them a notice.
So I know that Southern Hampshire Planning had a map when we were over in Chester of the aquifer, the water table.
Yeah.
So if they had that, that's got to be a public.
Probably in there, yeah.
Yeah, that's
that was probably generated by
Waterworks. Water resources.
And all those maps over there are Bear Paw maps, and they have all this information, but whoever goes and takes them, you know what I mean? Yes, but now it'll be right here, and so easy.
Yeah.
So this will be great.
Stone walls. Hydro.
Yeah, when I first moved here, I came right in and started looking through those maps.
Yeah,
I love maps.
I know, me too.
I get to see.
I told Megan I could go on, but I want to
get such a news best.
So,
it's like we still get a news
this month when I go to the, our trustees
they serve their purpose,
and
but
talk
I
about
books.
This. I want to write down your name and number so that the chair could get a hold of you.
Yeah, and I wanted to circle back to that. I can host and serve all that data.
Oh, okay.
But I don't currently have an agreement to maintain it. I don't know how you're maintaining it. I would like to talk to the trustee or whoever your committee is just to understand the data. But hosting it, you know, it's the population.
So just to put some dollars
I'm just thinking if Candia jumps over, then we should jump with them.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah.
You're not going to have a choice because it's not going to be hosted anymore by Stantec.
Right.
We get fired.
Yeah.
Never been so happy to be fired. So to put some dollars and cents to it, tell me if I'm wrong, Tim, but what he told us in our last meeting is it's $3,000 a year and it's a $3,000 setup fee.
Yeah. So the first year without the staff sites, I mean, it gets complicated quickly because there are all kinds of add-ons. But the base platform, which is the data processor in the assessor's office to keep the ownership and land record data up to date.
Is that a piece of hardware?
No. Data processor is a piece of software that sits on someone's computer, maybe Megan's or someone in the assessor's computer. Okay. They double-click it. So the first year is the initial setup and the first year of hosting. Initial setup, one time, $3,000. The annual hosting and support is an annual recurring $3,000. So year one is six, year two, three, moving forward is 3,000. There's all kinds of add-on capabilities. I just mentioned them as like, it doesn't include any of those, okay? But, you know.
Being able to do the department views and stuff like that, that's an add-on?
What?
The department views or whatever.
Oh, no, that's themes. No, okay, that's themes. Included in the setup.
Okay.
Really where you get an add-on is if you need tools to edit yourself. Or if you need tools to secure data from the public, if you need tools to run link error list of what CAMA records don't link to parcels, large format printing, you want to download your own layers. Those are tools that a little bit more advanced users are looking for. Those cost money, but everything I'm showing you and those themes, those are included.
So, like I said, I've got
baby steps.
I've got Amy.
Yes,
yeah.
Baby steps.
Yeah, I agree with
that. We'll ever get to that point where we're going to be mapping police calls.
I don't
know.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But
actually, I'm sure the police has software that can do that.
Yeah,
probably already do.
They do.
Yeah.
Usually, we come in when like municipal MRI. I don't know if you've got
it.
Are they doing like a fire study or looking at where different fire apparatus are coming from different stations and different all that type of stuff. That's where we come in for that.
So again, we're looking at, you know, and I don't, Amy hasn't gotten back to me yet about who else has an annual budget for this, so I don't know the answer to that question, but from our perspective, it's $1,300 more a year that we pay for this level of functionality versus what we have now.
Plus and then, the 3,000.
And then plus the 3,000.
We have money in our budget that we could contribute. I can find some, I'm sure. I mean, look, we could, because we would use the services, and we could probably find some money out of our budget to contribute.
Well, I will say this, that a member of the select board, not the chairman, but a member of the select board said that he'd find the money. So I don't think we have to necessarily worry about finding places to park that.
Contributors like ZBA and cemetery and us, and there'll be the money.
There'll be the money.
This will work well. No question about it.
Right.
Sounds like there'll be a savings to the town.
Hours of
exactly.
So
research.
What I guess I'll do, just so we can put it on the record, so that we have it for the select board and for budgeting and stuff. Let me just go around the table and ask, you know, if everybody's approves of it. So because we have members of two different boards here as well as ours, right?
Yep.
And then we got that recorded. So
make a motion.
Yeah, we need a motion.
Do you want a motion or a consensus?
Make a motion.
You can make a motion, but then Judith can't vote.
That's all right, but she can have a consensus for the DBA.
Sure, make a motion. Cut.
I don't know the name of the company. Wait a minute.
CAI.
I make a motion that we accept CAI Technologies for our GIS system.
Second.
I'll second that.
No, dude beat you by a half second. All right, so we'll keep going, and then we're gonna do this reverse order tonight because Judy's down there. Judy.
Yes.
Kevin.
Yes.
Linda.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Brian.
Yes.
Tim, absolutely yes. Mark.
Yes.
And representative of the zoning board, Judy.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That, I'm gonna put, instead of Y, I'm gonna put an A.
That fits my middle initial.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was wonderful.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, literally, I kind of felt like when he did the demo, Megan and I kind of felt like saying, where do we sign?
Yeah, no brainer.
Yeah.
It is a no-brainer.
I thought that the other system was supposed to do all this, and it just never materialized. What a disappointment.
Do you sleep well that night?
Yeah, I sleep just fine.
Really? I would think with all that.
No. I mean, I don't know anything else but this.
Really?
Yeah. So
you probably solve problems in your sleep.
Yeah. I've got here's an opportunity. One hell of a great team behind me doing all this stuff. I don't do any of the work.
Right.
I'll be done here.
But you have to understand it.
Yeah. Well, I got to understand it. Yeah. Yeah,
we used it in Davis for the Board of Health to find out where the livestock was located in town.
Cool.
We used GIS. Yeah.
It's down to individual chicken owners?
Yep.
Oh, really?
Down to where the chicken, you know, if there was a, you know, backyard chicken, yep, knew exactly what house that was. Because we had to do...
You can find the freshest eggs in the town.
Yeah. I don't know. That was the director, but yeah, that's what he used to use it for. He would give his livestock report at the end of the year.
You know, and some of this, I can't necessarily throw all of it at Stantec, because I think part of it was an oversight on this board's part. Yeah, that we never bothered to have the acreage or the frontage put on. And when Megan and I confronted Stantec about that, they're like, oh, sure, we can put that on. That'll cost you $750. And we're like, you know, that should have been done in the first place.
Right.
But
I think there was a lot of promises when it first came out by Stantec and never materialized.
Yeah. They weren't forthcoming, I don't think, with what they could offer either.
So I guess my recommendation, Tim, would be to put together documentation for the town to purchase the service from
you.
And then we will find the correct person to sign it.
I have a formal proposal that outlines all the functionality, screenshots, all that, and then a one-page agreement that references that proposal. And it will have the setup and the annual hosting, and then there's wording in there that says either party can cancel the service. We hope that never happens, but it's just an auto-renew service.
Perfect.
All right.
Do you provide a line item for extra layers and how much those cost as well?
For building them?
Yes.
For hosting. Okay. So building them, I don't. I can give you a rate table, but building them is going to vary based on what you give me to start with. If you give me just an old paper map that I have to digitize, that's going to be much less expensive than if I have to go out and capture every catch basin.
Yes. Yep.
So,
and Megan, too, I guess what I'd say is anybody in the town government who wants to look at this, even though Tim, they didn't make it to Tim's demo, we can even put it like in the minutes, that if they go to Auburn or Deerfield, go to the town website, they can look at this GIS mapping system.
Yep.
Or any residents who happen to read the minutes. Let's put that in the minutes.
I will. Thank you.
Yeah, this has been my quest to fill this donut hole. I'll just tell you. So here is the donut hole. And all the blues around you are using this platform. So any of these towns around here, Deerfield, Allenstown, Pembroke, Epsom, Nottingham, Epping, you know, they're all. You can go to any of them. Their town, or just query. They're all the same URL.
That gets us a discount.
It's Access GIS. Yeah. No, as a matter of fact, you know, you got to buy tonight or. It's all the same URL. It's accessgis.com and then Auburn NH or Epping NH or Raymond NH. You get it. Candy NH, hopefully. Okay, I'll get out of your hair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What's the URL again?
Yeah, so I'll say that a little slower.
Yeah.
So every ArcGIS site, the URL is www.axisgis, AXISGIS.com. Then it's /, town name, state.
Any dot between the
no dot.
Okay.
No, it's just if it's a two-word town name like
New Boston.
New underbar Boston, NH.
Okay, so www.axisgis.com/Auburn, New Hampshire.
Auburn, NH.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Auburn, I put
yeah,
NH.
Yeah. Town name, two-letter
state.
I'm
going to try it out when I get home.
Yeah. All right, here's a test. Deerfield, Massachusetts. What's that URL?
Well, it'd be the same one. Wouldn't it? And it'd just be Deerfield, Mass.
No, M-A.
I mean, I'm sorry. That's what I'm thinking and not saying.
You got it.
Yeah. What fun. We've been waiting for this for years.
We've been working on GIS for 6-7 years, maybe?
This is going to be so...
Before
I mean,
my time.
It's on the agenda for the Conservation Commission. It's on our standing agenda. Nothing new, nothing new, nothing new. We're going to blow it out of the water.
I don't even have to maximize...
Something new.
Yeah, and you can pull it up on your tablet or phone.
You
got it.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm not pretty when I sweat, and I was going to start sweating if I couldn't.
Yeah.
We would have a boring conversation. All right, I'll just clean up my stuff.
Yeah.
Looking at how much ease Megan is right now. She knows she has to save 2 hours a day.
but now my job's at risk.
I have a feeling somebody's going to find something to do with that 2 hours.
Save 2 hours a day. Maybe she's accomplished something.
There's probably going to be more people coming in.
There's always going to be work.
Oh, yeah.
You can just do it at a more...
leisure.
Yeah, less anxious.
Stressful.
Yeah. Instead of like, ooh.
Not call me up all frantic, yeah.
Okay, not that frantic.
So was it worth your trip out tonight, Judith?
Oh, absolutely. Because I'm thinking of something that I know that's coming before the board that I would kill to have the topographic maps. That, you know, I because it's going to be really important.
Yeah.
And I think the setbacks.
You mean before yours or us?
Chester, New Hampshire, yeah.
They're on the web too, I believe. Chester and H.
Oh,
yep. We do the maintenance there too.
That it's going to be really, really important.
Help Rich. Building.
Yeah.
But when you were saying, I'm like, okay, what's coming?
Right, you know, building inspector gets a building permit application, a by right application. He now can pull up all those setbacks, the surrounding properties.
Yeah.
The wetlands, he can see it all right there and be like,
"You
can't put the house there."
Yeah, I kept saying, "Let's get this done." All right.
Yeah.
Good to see you. I'm going to walk my dog.
Oh, boy. In the dark, don't fall down on the ice or anything.
Way less ice right now.
Yeah, it's all melty.
I know. It's
yeah.
I still have ice on my North Road extension.
Oh. We'll have ice for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. Usually till June.
Yeah. Yeah, shade will... little shade, yeah.
I remember one year we had snow. It was May, and there was so much snow on the playground at school. It was foggy, and you couldn't see the kids.
Oh yes,
it was. They were standing in the snowbanks, putting the basketballs in the.
Oh man,
I remember the mall still had snow piles in July one winter.
It's going to be a epic mud season.
Oh, going to be epic mud season.
My road's already started.
Yeah, mine. You can feel the pull.
Imagine
we got like 4 inches.
Imagine living on Power Hill this spring.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, they did put a lot of material down, so
I
yeah,
did
it should
be
a lot
better.
Thanks again.
All right.
But courier,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'll send that over to Megan, okay?
Yep.
Thanks again, Mark. I'll look forward to hearing from the cemetery.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah,
and it'd be great to have like a meeting for even the general public, you know, when we have it. Like, look what's available now.
The garden.
because I think people would be really impressed.
Yeah, if the town actually has one of those little projectors, that might be something good to have.
Good PR for what we do.
Unless you can still plug it onto the
yeah, we can figure that out.
Big screen and then still be able to see if somebody wants to speak.
Right. We can kind of figure out.
Yeah, not with my help, but yes.
It's gonna get a longer cord.
I got really excited when we saw that, so I'm glad everybody else is too.
Oh yeah,
it's really.
All right, so next up on the agenda, which we don't have too much to do tonight, next up is John Adams applying to be a alternate member.
Yep.
So
do I come up to the big table or?
Yeah, you can, whatever you want.
Get into the hot seat.
Yeah.
I don't think he's sweating.
Yeah.
He didn't sweat, so
it is a little
good.
Hot in here.
Well, you should be here.
You're overdressed, that's why.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was a little chilly this morning, but.
So introduce yourself. How's that?
My name's John Adams. I've been a resident of Candia for over 40 years. Been in an architectural field for over 30. Very interested in the planning board and how the town of Candia is progressing and moving forward, and the aesthetics of Candia, and just looking to participate in the planning board and trying to help out and contribute.
We certainly like that.
it's nice having people that are willing to be an alternate and come in. I know that's how I came in, that's how you came in, and just because I was interested. I came in during the hot mess of New Boston Road, and then Four Corners. It made me be interested in what's really going on here, and so I appreciate the idea of coming in and saying what's going on, because I'm surprised how much I didn't know.
So. I see a lot of it on the other side of the table. So again, I'm looking to try to get it to both sides, where again I'm presenting to a lot of boards and towns and cities and stuff. Again, I have a lot of experience, very experience through, you know, commercial. I'm a public safety designer, so I try to go in front of a lot of boards through Bedford. There's a lot of towns. I don't need to rattle them off, but again, I have an experience that I want to contribute, and go from there.
So
see what I can learn from you guys.
Follow what DOT wants to do with the 43 and 27 and how they come together.
I did see that. I thought that was a great idea, just looking at the mapping, yes.
Well, there was several ideas.
Yep.
But you looked at all of those.
Yeah. The rediverting of the road down over here, are you talking?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
I thought what was presented is going to solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, at least some of them will, right?
Yeah, and we'll still be putting it all by the school, though.
Well,
no.
Not to do the rotary up.
No, not. Most of them are diverting, but right before the school.
And if they would do that, that would get rid of that traffic by the school.
Bypass.
Yeah.
And we might even lose our one traffic light if they actually do that. Because there would be no reason to have it there anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Do a flashing yellow and may the best man win.
Well, just there will be so much less traffic if that goes away. Think about the Deerfield Fair.
Mm. Well, that intersection right across the street from the church has been a nightmare since I've been here forever.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's just a timing thing where it's just anything's waiting to happen.
I think the only way that sidetracked here, but I think the only way that bypass works is if they shut off Main Street.
Discussion.
Yeah, that if they shut off Main Street at both ends. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, moving on.
They're coming in for the select board soon, right?
Yes. That's why you guys were all invited. So.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be presented at the selectmen's
meeting. Yep.
Yeah. Sorry, I just diverted because you said public safety.
Yeah, you
find that.
Yeah.
Well,
I
really win.
Actually, just to clarify, public safety is police and fire design.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So I do a lot of police and fire.
All right.
Yep.
Okay. So out of
curiosity, I just happened to catch the St. Anselm College new 150 bed residence hall. So, what was your just out of something I picked? What was your involvement in this project?
That was on my resume.
St. Anselm's.
Yep.
Yeah, new 150 bed.
Oh, that bedroom. Must have been a mistake. I wasn't on that project.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right. So how many others?
Trust but verify.
Exactly.
Can I see that list?
Yeah.
This is an office resume.
Oh, maybe it's
so,
for the whole office that you work for.
If you look at the first, like, 10, those are definitely mine.
Okay.
I used to do education before.
Okay.
Or higher ed. I am strictly civic studio, police, fire, town halls, DPWs.
What did you do, make sure that...
Yeah, so my office that I work in, we have 7 studios varying from healthcare, education, to civic, to corporate, to higher ed. I've worked in a lot of them. I started in education. I'm a person where I like to learn and then move on to learn to more. So I like to try to gain experience in every aspect of my office. So I've done that other than healthcare.
Okay. All right.
I could have done that project, but I was probably too busy on other projects.
Do I get anything else?
I don't know why we almost have to have an interview, because if somebody says they'd like to be involved,
I know. We're happy.
I think it's a positive thing.
So we do have to vote. So
I'll make a motion that we vote to accept you as an alternate member of the Candia Planning Board.
Second.
Linda in with the quick second. All right, so we'll start down that end there again. Judy.
Yes.
Kevin.
Yes.
Linda.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Brian.
Reluctantly, yes.
Tim, yes. And Mark.
Yes.
Okay, so I voted yes, but I'm going to give you a cautionary note. If you couldn't tell, there's a certain chemistry to this board and a certain way we do things, and I just ask you that as you sit here, show up for the meetings, and you observe how everybody has their own little points, and we all respect and get along, even when we disagree or people make different points, that you respect that system we've built here.
I've been around the table a long time. I understand everyone has their own opinions. I'll have my own opinion as well, which I hope everyone appreciates that. Again, I may be positive or negative on what comes in, but I'm going to express my experience and regulations of the town and basically vote based on those merits. And again, I what your opinion is, I everyone has their own opinion.
Yep, agreed. And again, that's one of the things I think everybody in this board feels this way. That's a highlight, is that we have different opinions, but yet we all
can respect the other people.
Absolutely.
And we find that common ground.
I've been around the round table a long time, and in architecture, everyone has their opinions, and I have really thick skin working in the industry. I understand that.
Cool. All right. Well, welcome.
Yep. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
I'm just curious why you were reluctant.
I'm personally?
Yep.
I'm not totally convinced. I would have liked to seen you around a little more. I'm very cautious when somebody just pops in and want to beat somebody.
Yep. Well, I've been around. So
I know you've been around,
so,
but not here.
So I just started coming into the meetings because...
Logan.
Sorry?
You attended the Logan meetings.
And that one I wasn't impressed with you at all.
My main focus on the meetings was the amount of 55 and older communities that we have. And again, I don't know the experience of the board that you guys have seen from the past, which again, I understand why you're saying what you are, but for me being in the town for so long and the amount of 55 and older communities that we have in here, I thought we're going a little above and beyond and changing the landscape.
By the 10% rule. I mean.
Yeah. No, understood. Yeah. And that's where the regulations come involved.
The situation is, the reason that has occurred is, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that type of thing in a few minutes here, but the reason that has occurred is that is the kind of development that our zoning ordinances are basically promoting the way they're written today.
I totally understand. I get it.
Right?
Yep.
It's the only high-density development you can do that you can make money on. So that's what developers are going to want to do. We've now pretty much capped out. I think someone can put like a 5-unit, 55-plus house.
About it.
Pretty much maxed out is that number. Yeah.
But that's...
I'm more, again, my contribute to this board is aesthetics to the town. And that's my main focus, is what the town looks like. And that's my main focus.
Yeah. Are you still going for a rural feel, look, charm?
So again, I've been here since, I've been in seventh grade, which I don't even want to say what year it is, but I've been here for a long time, and it has changed from where I started to where we are now. Is it good or bad? I don't think it's bad. We are heading into the right direction. It's going to help the town benefit as well. I just don't like the clustered development right on the road, in your face. That's where I have an issue with. The development right here is a great. You have a road. It has their own property. The Logan property is, again, it's a large field. And again, I'll use that as an example. But it's going to be in your face. You're going to drive by there and you're going to see.
You're not going to see.
Again, I disagree, but...
That was brought up that night. That's why I disagree with it, because...
I understand.
Rooftop is all you're going to see.
Here
rooftop.
Brian, here we go. He has an opinion. He doesn't have the opinion.
No,
you're arguing
this
it.
This is based on facts.
You're arguing it. He's
I don't know what you
opinion.
Do for a living, but I told you what I do for a living. And I've been doing it for a long time, and I totally understand what's happening there.
So, John, I'd like to say something here.
Yep.
So I never came to a planning board meeting. And I'm on this board specifically because that project over there, I took his spot.
Yep.
Okay. So there's people on this board that do not like me because of that.
Yep.
And I don't like them because they're, you know. So we work with it.
Yep.
But we all get along.
But we get along.
On the board.
So
it's all good.
So don't feel just because you've been called out because you haven't come just to a couple of meetings. But
the thing with the Logan project on High Street is. I don't believe there was anything technically that we could have done to stop
it. Absolutely. Yes. It sounds like he's going to do a great project. I wish it was just a little further up.
I understand. And I think when you were here, I said, I understand. But in that particular case, all of the T's were crossed.
Yep.
And the Artillery Road thing was the thing that made us, took a lot of leverage away from us. But we just... I think it's going to be a really nice project.
Yep. I don't disagree with you.
It's a blessing that it's going to be a good project because there's nothing we could have done to stop it.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
That was my concern when that came in, was that we had no way to stop it, and that if it was a crap project, there wasn't anything we could really do about it except for ask for some aesthetics.
Right.
But in the end, I think that's going to be a good project. Yeah. But we couldn't say no. Well, we could say no, but we'd end up in court and we'd lose. So
right.
There you go.
Right, we would have lost.
We would have lost.
In that particular case, we would have. And he did go to court on New Boston, and we barely won in that one. But now that we're near max on, we've capped out at over 55, that gives us more leverage elsewhere.
Right. Yep. All right. So let us move on. Next thing on the agenda.
So actually, if I just one more question. So, as an alternate, say Kevin's out. What kind of notification do I get? We kind of talked about this briefly, but
You should show up to as many meetings as you can.
Yes, absolutely.
If we know someone's not going to make it, either Megan or I or both of us will reach out to you and say,
"Yep,
so and so is not going to be here. Can you make sure you're there tonight?"
Yep.
Now we try. I mean, sometimes on the last minute, something comes up at my work. But I usually reach out to either Kim or Megan.
Yep.
And I remember one night I was like calling you on your deathbed at home going, dude, I'm going to need you. We're not going to have a quorum. Can you dial in?
But one of the things that was so valuable to me is when there was an empty seat and I got up here and could actually learn about how things go and make votes and things. It was very a good, valuable learning experience.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff. Same thing happened with the budget committee. It's like, you have no idea what you don't know when you get in there. And all of a sudden, you start to learn, and it takes a while.
Still learning on this job.
Yeah.
We all are.
Mm-hmm. I'll get back. Thank you. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
So,
Megan. I can stick around if you want.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Whatever
you're welcome to.
Yeah.
So, Megan printed off everybody the second version of the draft audit from Southern Hampshire Planning on our zoning ordinances. Before we dive into that, I do just want to state this, that, you know, I was hoping with this HOP grant, which, you know, is woefully behind schedule, that we could get an engineering review of our ordinances.
Is Cam still the guy?
Cam is still a guy. That's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I had asked Stantec, signed a letter with Stantec to review our zoning ordinances and regulations, you know, to kind of go along with the HOP grant, but more to look at the inconsistencies where we say this here, we say that there, you know, we've got a, you know, a cul-de-sac width of this and the standard really is that, these types of things. So I couldn't really engage Keach for that since we have signed agreement with Stantec to do that. They never did anything. They've terminated us.
Did they bill us for doing it?
No, we didn't get any bills for it. Okay. So I'm going to approach Keach because Southern Hampshire Planning is looking at the zoning ordinances to make them more development friendly, which is one perspective, mm-hmm. right? But I think we also need the technical perspective of where are our zoning ordinances too strict, too lax, not consistent, not up to normal standards. Because we all know that those things were all put together piecemeal.
Right.
Right. Originally, they were created in one shot, and now they've been...
It's really important to comb out the ones that are directly conflicting with other ones, which we know are in there.
We know are in there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just like when we did the application fees, right? And... Megan and I found out that there were four different places where there were application fees, and all four were different. Right? So so that I'm going to reach out to Steve Keach on that to try and get him going on that, because I would like to have it from an engineering perspective, too, that we get the right ordinances and don't have conflicting things. And I know there's conflicting things, like, between the ordinance and the regulations, on what I can't remember which it is, on one of them, the setbacks can be used in the buildable land calculation, and the other they can't be. So there are inconsistencies that I
So Keach seems like the kind of guy that finds that stuff, and it like some people that are really experienced can look at a spreadsheet and see everything in the world on a spreadsheet, and other people can't decipher it. He's one of those guys that can breeze through stuff and say,
Right. Yeah, because he's looked at it for hundreds of times, right?
There used to be an app. I used to use it, just for students. But it would catch, if you had a phrase and it was repeated again. So it goes through the whole document, and then it captures the phrase that's repeated somewhere else in the document. So then, even if you just have keywords like setback or frontage, it would pop up. So wherever in that document that comes up, so then it's already pinpointed, so you can find out where the error is. I don't know if that is a program that's around still, or if he probably has something like that.
Well, and knowing Steve, it's probably all here, you know, too, because he's gone through our ordinances quite a few times already, so just in doing application stuff, so I'm sure he's got a pretty good
feel. Because that was just an easy way of finding repetitiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's something I want to do because I think it would just help us.
So is there anything specific in this you wanted to point
out? Yeah, I just, you know, I read through it, which was an enlightening read. And surprisingly, a lot of things he said in here were that our stuff was well done. And that, you know, we you know, like the 3-acre zoning in the residential district was well done. And it, you know, preserves the character of the town, blah, blah, blah. But he did pick some things, and some of the things I'm not even going to cover because we don't necessarily even want to think about them. I'm just going to make a note of a couple things up front here. I'm just going to take my notes. Like, one of the things he said was that the state regulations now are one parking space.
Page?
Yeah. Four parking requirements?
Yeah, probably. State.
State housing statute.
And
one space.
Yes, should have typed.
Yeah, maximum requirement.
Yeah,
yeah. So, you know, the state now is one parking space is the maximum we can require. We have two. I see no need to change that. I mean, obviously, if an applicant comes in here and pounds their fist on the table, we'll have to capitulate. But I don't see anybody trying to build a house in Candy with one parking space.
No.
To me, that screams Manchester.
Right.
City.
Highly dense. There's not enough curbside to accommodate a lot of parking. But here, any place you go, you're going to have more than enough space to make two, and most people will.
Right. Well, I mean, I can't imagine building a house in Candia that you can't build a house in Candia that's going to sell for anything less than $800,000 right now. And you're going to build an $800,000 house and you're going to put in one parking space? Good luck selling that.
Well, you could take the 55 and older, which would be on a smaller property, but it's going to be big enough to support two parking spots.
Those are still $650,000, $700,000 now.
Yeah, right. But the property size will support two.
Right. Yeah.
And then I would imagine the town has an ordinance of certain amount of acreage or parking and all that other stuff as
we've
well.
We've never had anybody come in here and ask for a waiver for the parking spaces. So I appreciate that we are not compliant with state law.
Okay.
Who would ask for less?
Forgiveness.
Somewhere in here, and I didn't write page numbers down on this, so my apologies. Methodology. Non-conforming structures, yeah, keep going. He mentions, it's past that. You know, one of the things he does mention is definition gaps, saying we should address townhouses, cottage clusters.
What, where are you?
Oh, I'm sorry, page 10.
3.2. Okay.
Townhouses, row houses, cottage clusters, live-work units. I got to state that I think if we put those things in the zoning ordinance and try to get an amendment, I don't see them passing.
People will freak out.
Yeah. Even if they're great ideas, yeah. I think we'd be...
People will see the word cluster and lose their mind.
Correct. I agree. One of the things he mentioned, and I don't know where it is, but I think it's farther in, but it's something too that he brings up that's an interesting point, but I'm not sure that we want to talk and we want to discuss it because Jeff would not be happy with it. There's no problems with our road spec of 60-foot right-of-way and 22-feet road, but his one issue was that it's the same no matter the number of houses, which does make it more expensive for smaller number of houses. I just don't think the road agent and the town want to be having new roads built that aren't to that standard that will be difficult to maintain, plow. And
no, because you don't know down the road if there's any expansion possible.
Correct.
You know, good intentions to start with, but
That was my
short sighted, I think.
Yeah, that was my take exactly, and that's why I'm.
Yeah, these regulations just don't fit every town. It's more.
Which is why we don't want the state
suburbia or city, and that's okay. That's just not who we are.
Correct. The next one, let's see if I can find it here, was the mentions of the cistern requirement, the 30,000-gallon cistern requirement. And I got to be honest, I can't remember where it was.
Now, where does that cistern water come from? Is it
groundwater.
It's
not groundwater. It's surface water that runs into it.
Okay.
So the fire department has to maintain it.
All right.
Right. The original developer would have it filled with, call a pool company.
Okay.
Fill it. But as it gets used or checked every year,
then
it's up to the fire department to fill it.
All right. Okay. Thanks.
And they do periodically go around and check all this.
Okay.
Make sure there's not a hole in it.
Right. They'll pump them or whatever.
Yeah. The one thing he mentions about it, which I I understand and I agree with, and you know, is that we don't change that value, that size or the requirement based on the size of the development. So a 6-house, 8-house development would have that same requirement, and a 27-house would have that exact same requirement for a cistern.
We usually take input anyways from the fire chief.
We usually do with what the fire chief says. That's what our regulations call out.
Because I think we've done a waiver when somebody came in and it required the 30 and we ended up reducing it based on the chief.
Correct.
Yeah.
And just like the chief, you know, Diamond Hill and Logan, you know, the chief didn't want a water cistern up at the top of the hill that can only be used on that little stretch of road up there. He wanted an enhancement to the fire retention pond down the bottom of the hill that can be used
for the whole
everywhere,
area.
And it's just right up the hill. Yeah. And the same thing with Logan. He's like, rather than a cistern, improve the fire retention pond that's there now. I think that criticism is correct. I think we're kind of addressing it with the fire department making the decision on the call.
Right.
So I like to throw in with that it doesn't. The size of the project doesn't mean that you're going to have a 30-house fire versus a 5-house fire. Typically, it's one house or two houses, and it's 30,000 gallons enough to, you know, for that incident, because it's very unusual to have a large incident in our
town. I can tell you that not the most current former fire chief, but a former fire chief in town, and not Rudy, you know, basically explained to me that they show up with, 5,000 gallons? And he said, the minute they roll, Deerfield or Auburn start rolling with another 5,000 gallons.
Yeah.
And he said, honestly, if we pump both those pumpers dry, your house is to the ground already.
Well, Dean said to me, he's like, if we pump 5,000 gallons of water into your house, it's total.
Yeah.
Okay.
The insurance company is going to tear it down. You can't recover from that.
So this is basically overkill of overkill.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, and I think the only time you would tap into that is if there were like
a drought.
All 9 houses burning.
Right. If you have a year with a drought, that's where the cisterns come in, because your water
and they still set up. They still set up the pools and shuttle too.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I mean, they don't just rely on the cistern.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, while I agree with that statement, we've shown great flexibility with based on the fire chief's recommendation. So I'm not.
5,000 gallons is half a swimming pool.
Yeah.
If you dump that into a house,
it's gonna be yeah.
It's a lot of water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Think about a nice dam that causes leaks in it's like gallons of water.
Oh yeah.
That causes the insurance company to come and say we got to tear it all out.
Yeah. Now the one I just throw this out there for an interesting discussion is
page.
That I'm at page 18. And basically, if you look at the 20-acre example, right? This is elderly workforce housing. We have to come back
one,
up on
one
that.
Mile or 2 mile?
Go back to page 16, sorry. And you look at tier 2, okay, density formulas, all that stuff. We don't need, that's not the thing that I focused in on. He mentions this several times. We have a maximum for multifamily housing of 6 units per structure. And we also limit one housing building per lot. So that means no matter the size of the property, someone has a 20-acre lot and they want to put some multifamily housing in, they can only do 6 units.
Where are you seeing 6?
Maximum 6.
Maximum 6 units.
Three up from tier 3.
I didn't, yeah.
Yeah.
Tier 2, Tier 3. I didn't go into the zoning ordinance to look at all this stuff and to see if it's, you know, whether ZBA can actually change it.
Maximum 6 units per structure.
And one building per lot.
I don't see one. One unit per
Is that still requiring 3 acres per lot?
Well, that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to subdivide down. Well, you can only do a first unit 3 acres, and then, you know, 1 acre per additional unit. So if you were trying to build 6 units, you'd have to have 3 plus 5. You'd have to have 8 acres.
Well, he's talking tier two, which has got a second ADU, duplexes and multifamily.
Well, this is complexity. I've just picked this one because I came to it. This is mentioned several times throughout
this
report.
So is he saying in our current regulations, somebody could say, I want to put a 6-unit apartment building on a 3-acre lot?
No, it would have to be 8.
An 8-acre lot.
Yeah.
Okay. But they could do it right now?
Well, they'd have to go to the ZBA and...
I mean, that's what the condos are, essentially, right? Yeah. The 3 buildings, but they're...
Yeah.
They've got more acreage.
Yeah. And they had to go to the ZBA.
And they went to the ZBA.
Yep. Is that the new development down 27?
Cross on Donovan.
Yeah, across from Donovan.
Yep.
Yeah. But that's 3 duplex units for a total of 6.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
So it can be done, it's just not in the zoning ordinance, is what he's saying. It has to be a...
To go through the ZBA.
That's why we have the ZBA.
Yeah, so I don't have a problem with it. I'm just saying.
No. When Scott did that project at Four Corners, it was a small number of buildings with a large number of units. And what was the key phrase, besides elderly housing, it was...
Innovative.
Innovative land use. Yeah. So that's a whole separate subtext. In that's not in our regulations,
which triggers off
in state regulations.
Yeah, and it triggers off a whole bunch of other reviews. Right. So what his point is that requires a lot more review process and overhead. So again, I'm not saying this is something we need to correct. Again, I understand where it's coming from. It's something we can consider and talk about, but you can currently do it. You just have to go through the ZBA and the innovative land use and all that
That's
stuff.
That's being driven from the state down, though.
Yes.
We may be SOL on this at some point
right,
in the near
right,
future,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's being pushed so hard from the top.
Yeah.
The interesting stat, which is mentioned twice in here, once is at the very end. Here we go.
What page?
Right toward the end. Oh, here we go.
What page?
No,
last
page.
Front.
No, that's not what I'm... Here we go. I got it right here.
What page?
27.
Oh.
I knew it was right at the end, but I cruised right by it. This I found interesting. 38% of existing homes in Candy are on lots under 3 acres.
Because there's so many old homes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of the East Candy areas.
Yeah, 25% of the lots are under 2 acres and 11% are under 1 acre.
East Candy, the other side of the
huge.
Tracks.
Yeah.
Where I live.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
where I live.
Yeah.
Well, Pine Ridge Drive area, right? There's a whole development there. They're all 1 acre lots for the most part.
Where's that?
Yeah, Pine Ridge.
Behind the golf course, essentially.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, his point on it is that, you know, the 3-acre zoning doesn't necessarily fit in with the historical development of Candia.
Right.
Okay.
No, if you go way back, there was a lot of mills and stuff, so they were smaller lots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was workforce housing.
and
that was workforce
was.
Housing.
Yeah. The original.
Yeah,
the
anybody
original
who lived in the village lived on
the
small
village,
lots.
East
yeah.
Candia, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
It's like when you came in about Logan and you were concerned about it being 400 feet away, and I said to you, that used to be a carriage road, and the houses are 25 to 50 feet from the road. Everything was right there.
That's Langford Road, right?
Oh,
drive
yeah.
that in the a long truck sits in the road, right? Because the driveway is just
well,
non-existent.
How about that house at the corner of
maybe
you're talking about Langford and Depot.
Oh, yeah.
Where the guy's 30-year-old Cadillac, the bumper is that far into the road.
That bumper was smashed in.
Smashed in.
It repaired. That's why it's a different color. But he still parks it right there so a plow could hit it.
Yeah.
So,
and the visibility down the street you can't see because I'm pulling out of the farm and I can't see down the street because his Cadillac's still in the way.
Yeah, so that, you know that we have a regulation and you have to have a setback now. So granted, that doesn't fit the old.
Right, so I understand his point. It is something that if we get into a discussion where we're trying to do some higher density, I can't call them cluster because people will have a hissy fit.
Who's their mind?
But some higher density with protected lands around the property, that is a justifiable point for smaller.
You mean for condensed developments?
Yes.
Where the wildlife will still have a home?
Correct. Correct.
See how I did that?
Yeah.
Correct. We will protect those open lands.
Does the conservation committee approve of those?
I can't speak for the whole Conservation Commission, but I do think you put houses densely and really protect a lot of unfragmented land. Yes, totally. Call it conservation planning.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think that's why I brought up at the last meeting.
Because if you do 3 acre, 3 acre, 3 acre, you know, animal habitat is destroyed, whatever. Yeah, so you really have to think about your natural resources.
Your vernal pools.
Yeah, vernal pools. Oh, yes.
Well, DES doesn't care about those. They just...
I heard, DES.
They're not a fan of old Vern, are they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was used to get in trouble for playing in them.
But only part of the year.
Right.
Exactly.
So I'll just give you my last notes because he mentioned them several times throughout the document. We should look at allowing medium density housing, which I think is kind of what we're talking about. Yeah, medium. Maybe that's the term we use. A medium density development with conservation land around it.
Medium density.
Right. We do not allow for diversity of housing, which truly is our problem right now. Right now, our zoning ordinances require basically somebody to build an $800,000 plus house on 3 acre lot. I can't argue with that statement.
No. So, I mean, you figure by the time you buy a lot, and then you get your funding, you got to put a $500,000 house on it. You know, the lot's going to cost you $250,000.
Right. The lot's going to cost you over $200,000.
Yep.
Well, can an acre of land have septic and a well? It'll fit.
Well, okay. As long as the engineering, right? So when they do the test pit will tell them
depends on the lot, too.
On the drainage,
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's 2 weeks, but 2 weeks, that's plenty, though.
Just that's a plenty. Recommendation is you always put your septic tank downstream from your well.
Right.
I think that's actually a rule.
So it was interesting, something on the Chester page came up recently that the Dubai group is trying to do something like, it almost sounds like the tiny home development that they did out in
Dover.
Yeah. It seemed like a very much along that same line, so it's kind of interesting where that will go, but yeah.
I think I mentioned this before, when I was in my old job, I drove a lot, and I was in Connecticut. Like, there's some really affluent towns in Connecticut. Lots of trees, lots of farmland, mm-hmm. came around this corner, and there was 10 houses that were the size of this room, cute, yellow little cottages, then they were tiny homes, and they all had one car. And it's just like widowers that just like were older and just had a place. I don't think people in town could handle that, but it wasn't unattractive. And you know that they paid a huge amount of taxes, even though they had really nothing for it, but they had a little place. And they were very attractive.
Yeah, I think we're what we're going to have to do, and I had hoped we would have been able to, you know, get more out of Southern Hampshire Planning to get that, an outreach committee going again like we did last time, because we really need to have some sessions with this room filled with people and talk about all the different options and find out what the townspeople want and get it out there before we come in with some zoning ordinance regulations. We're not going to be able to change this by just putting something on the ballot.
We decided.
That's part of what the hot grant was supposed to do.
It's part of what it was supposed to happen. So, I'm going to reach out to Cam and try and see what we can do. But
cattle prod him?
Yeah, cattle prod him. But, that's what we need. We need to, first of all, educate. Second of all, listen.
Yeah. Could it be a conversation we have with the zoning board, too? Because it would definitely need to be cooperative.
Yeah, I think we need to find a way to get, everybody involved as much as we can, because it's a complex problem, and if this town, and it's up to the townspeople. If this town wants to be 3-acre zoning and $1 million houses, then so be it. If you really want affordable housing, and you really want your kids to be able to live here or grandma to be able to stay here, then we've got to change this document.
Yes, there's
it's that simple.
It's a dilemma.
Similar to our abutting town or town, Hooksett, their zoning has a zoning area for specifically medium density, and then they have residential, commercial.
Mm-hmm.
We have something similar to that. I don't know if we break it into medium density like you guys are talking about right now, but that could be something that the zoning board could consider, so that these medium density type houses are in a certain area instead of scattered throughout the whole entire town of Candia.
That would be us.
Yes.
Right? And we could decide all we want. If the people don't vote for it, it ain't happening. And if we come up with something like that the town really hates, there'd be a lot of faces changed on this board.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did try with the village district.
Which was a great idea.
Yeah,
it was a great idea.
It failed.
Yeah.
It failed. I mean, it went to the voters and they didn't want it. Which ultimately everything should go to the voters anyway, because they're the ones who pay the taxes into the town.
But if, for instance, at the exit 3 interchange, which is now going to be a solar field and what have you, if they said, we want to put in 20 small units in there, it wouldn't affect the visibility. Like, coming off the highway, you wouldn't really see them very much. You already got gas stations and all kinds of stuff. Like, that wouldn't be an eyesore, but it would be a valuable resource. People could actually live there with easy access to the highway. But that ship sailed a long time ago. But there's not a lot of places you could do that in town.
I mean, it'd be a nice place for townhouses for kids who are coming in. Yeah, if you could get them to $250,000 for a townhouse, then as our kids growing up in town, instead of having to leave the town, go live in Manchester, they could buy a place there, get some equity, sell the townhouse, and buy a house eventually.
That's a great idea, but I think, unfortunately, because of the construction fees right now, or costs, I think it's going to be very difficult to get an affordable house for young home buyers. Like, even, just taking these townhouses or even the 55 and older, they're 600, 700 and over. And, again, you're talking same style houses in a medium density type, application where
we're definitely
low income is very difficult for contractors or developers to come in and say, we're going to build this for low income. Right. It's very challenging.
They build it for low income, they're getting federal tax dollars to pay the rents and everything else. So that's why they do it.
Yep.
Yeah, we have workforce housing, but we're not looking to go below that level.
Yeah,
but
Section 8.
So I've been to the Dover tiny houses.
Oh, have you?
And it's so well done. And I wish they could come and present, because I can't remember if it was like an 8-acre parcel. And I wish I had the specifics, how many houses you could have put on, big mansions, whatever. But instead they put like 20 of them on 4 acres, and 4 acres remained undeveloped, and they are tight and well made, and therefore, the nurses, the teachers, the professionals, and they talked to all the abutters. What's, you know, are you going to be worried about this? They said, these are working class people. They're students. They're, you know, I mean, they're cool, that sense of community, and they're really strict. You don't own them, because if you, you know, there are certain, like, not lights out at 10, but, you know, there are restrictions if you are noisy or whatever. They follow through and they kick you out, because there was, you know, people that weren't students. Adhering. Yeah. No, yeah. Not necessarily students. Right. Like, it could be older idiots. Yeah. You know what I mean? Don't blame it on students.
No, but I was a student.
Right. But I mean,
they're
these
non-compliant.
Are
and it didn't have a big impact on the school.
Totally
either.
A way. Yeah, totally a great way to solve or at least address this problem, because it is affordable rental.
But
you
the way they
mean?
Built that, they did a session on that on Chronicle. They built it so every single piece of board was exactly what
yes.
they needed.
No,
there was
no,
no waste. There was no,
no
scrap,
right.
no waste. Everything fit like Legos.
That, you know,
just phenomenal.
I think another thing we need to consider, and then we'll move on, but I think another thing we need to consider is, and I'm going to use this term, but we're going to have to find another term or another definition, manufactured homes.
Right.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because you said
right.
there are certain
modular.
Zoning areas
yeah.
already in town. Wouldn't it be cool to use that and just make that little adjustment? Instead of manufactured, it could be
yeah.
tiny homes.
But I think the manufactured home of today is
different
than the manufactured home when that manufactured housing zone was created.
Yeah,
these are not these
those,
are not double wides.
Right. Those four properties were made for trailer parks.
Correct.
And they're zoned that way. So
yeah.
this was way back in the, what, 80s?
Stubby.
I think they did it.
Yeah.
yeah. So it would be nice, it, like yeah. you're saying, make stick houses.
Or
down
even the
there.
Modular houses. That they built
modulars or something.
Come
and
try
right.
to trailers.
Factory, and they come. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, the manufactured houses of today are just like a stick built house.
Yes.
They're just made in a factory with a bunch of people doing air guns.
Exactly.
But they're full size.
Full size
real
yeah.
houses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just come in different quadrants
cheaper.
And two stories
yeah.
and
yeah.
bang.
You can have
bang,
a foundation and everything else.
Yeah, they're cheaper because they're made in a factory
right.
rather than. What length? 2x40 need? Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
it's just
build time.
Bing, 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 thump, 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 you know?
And also they buy train loads of material. That's,
yeah.
It's stock sizes, and they can pipeline material like that.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, so we...
So alternative building.
Right.
Those, yeah.
Something.
Something like alternative...
You know,
house.
Yeah.
Of course, I think one of the issues is that like Manchester's been building like crazy, right? All these apartments. They're filling up, and the pricing, I don't think, is going down at all. So whatever we do, it is not going to have much of an effect. It's still going to be, you know, still going to be expensive, and I wish we could help bring it down.
You're not
going to
get a $500,000 house in Canada. You're just not. So we'll just keep talking about this stuff, and we'll have to get the town involved, and I guess we'll work on that to try and make that happen. But I want to finish up with here, and then we'll do the minutes and get out of here. We did on the ballot, they put our three amendments, but the two big ones on the ballot will not be the entire amendment because it's too big. So there's a summary that Mike Courtney wrote, but they don't have the details of what the ordinance is. So we have put it on the website today, or yesterday?
I sent it yesterday. She put it on today.
Okay. I then took the links to those two amendments and posted them on Facebook and just did a brief,
good.
You know, please read these. Here's what we're trying to accomplish, and, you know, you decide type of thing, just so that those are, I got it on both the uncensored and the community page.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't normally post up there much about the board, but I felt this was important to, because people aren't going to know what they're voting for
right.
by a little summary, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on our website now, and I'm looking at the planning board announcements, and there isn't...
It's under the ballot.
Okay.
You got to go to the ballot page.
All right.
Right, so, because I think if people read those, they'll probably have a different opinion rather than
Well, solar ordinance? I don't like solar power.
Those comments.
Lighting ordinance. They're saying I can't put lighting on my property. I'm going to vote against that. That's not what we're saying. So. Right. Next up, minutes from February 4th. I didn't read them, I got to be honest.
They look good to me.
I read them and I couldn't find anything.
Motion.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
Second.
We will just do a voice vote for minutes.
Aye.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Bing.
Judy's at the door.
I'll take another motion.
Motion to adjourn?
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I didn't think so.
Hey, are you going to make a sign?
No.